Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
And that, of course, is our theme song, Hot Tuna, Embryonic Journey. And welcome to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. I am your host, Jim Christina, on the air with my friend, co-host tonight, Mr. Russ Avison.
Well, co-host, I wouldn't push the friend part too much, but how are you, Jim?
I don't even want to talk to you now.
Oh, man.
I'm good. After the last 4 months, I'm actually good.
You sound so, like you're in great spirits.
I am. I'm just so happy that I'm able to be
that
on the
alive.
Air with that. Well, that too. I am thrilled that I am alive and that I'm able to be on the air. And it's kind of cool. It's kind of fun.
Yeah.
It is. And although I do have to say that I'm getting real tired of going everywhere in a mask.
Yeah, I have to teach my classes wearing a mask, and it is awful.
Well, I mean, you have to go to bed wearing a mask. I've talked to Karen already.
Yeah, but she doesn't have to look at me.
Yeah, I know, huh? But, oh, my God, it's just horrible. And, here in Idaho, it's like they don't have to wear masks, and a lot of people don't. And I'm thinking, holy shit, what are they thinking?
They're not.
Is this something that
that's
they want to die from? Apparently. There's a place. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm amazed at these people that are still. There was a video of a guy got thrown off, a JetBlue plane the other day because he refused to wear a mask and he made a big deal out of it.
Yeah.
And they say, I have my rights. I have my freedom. I don't have to wear a mask. And then they run and get in their car. And the first thing they do is put on a seatbelt.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
What kind of battles are they picking? And they have the ones who aren't wearing the masks absolutely have no respect for anyone else.
No, absolutely not. Because it's not there to keep you from getting sick. It's from you getting someone else sick.
Yeah. Well, I'm hearing a lot of radios turning off right now.
Oh, really? I think Jerry's running around the house now, turning off radio. Turn off the radio! Turn off the radio! Oh,
man, those
listen
jerks
quiet,
on the radio, they
quiet.
Don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, I know. There's a place here in Star called Sully's, and it's actually a tavern, an Irish tavern. And you go in there, I haven't been in there, but they go in there and they take their masks off. Now, why would they do that?
Because that's when you're indoors with a bunch of people, social, that's where it's the worst.
Social distancing, everybody sitting next to each other at a bar with no mask. Hello.
Well, we could belabor this all night, but I do want to say one thing. Saturday Night Live had a great cold opening, and Jim Carrey was playing Joe Biden, and it was Biden in the debate. And when it was all over, Joe Biden goes, if they could just kind of have like our I don't know, like the leader of the country and karma kind of come together, and I don't know what could happen. And of course, they were referring to, but anyway, let's move on. I don't want to tick off
let's move on
before we get moving.
I know. I could very easily do it. And of course we have decided that this is not a political program.
But
we could get that way really fast. We could get that way really fast. Okay, we have tonight's guest. I'm going to let him introduce himself. He is a writer. He's a middle school teacher. He's just done so much stuff. He's lives in Central Tennessee. And please welcome to the Writer's Block, Mr. Jerry Harwood.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank
so
you all
tell
for
us
having
about
me.
Yourself.
I really appreciate it.
No worries. Tell sure us thing. About yourself, Jerry.
Sure thing. So I have grown up here in Tennessee. I've traveled the world, but I've lived here most of my life in Alabama, Georgia, and Tennessee. Currently, I'm a middle school teacher, and then I teach psychology as an adjunct teacher at night for a local college. And that's really my life. I took that life a couple years ago, really, so I could start writing. I've always wanted to write. I've always been the guy that said, one day I'm going to, and finally took the step. So got myself a job where I have summers off and have some nice vacation time, some free evenings, and have made it happen. So it's just been a real, real joy and a blessing for me, and super excited to be on programs like this and talk about writing.
Okay, and you're a college professor?
Just an adjunct professor. I've been doing it about 20 years. And then I teach middle school as my full-time job.
Right.
My first real gig that I did, I was a camp director. So I've always worked with sort of, you know, high school, middle school kids. I ran a summer camp for many years. Loved doing that, being outside up here in Tennessee. And then I moved from that and became a program director at a counseling center. So that's the counseling piece there. I ran with that for a while. And then moved over kind of third career, I suppose, to teaching middle school. But I've always taught college just as a side hustle, I think is what you call it. We used to call it a job, but I think now you have to call it a hustle.
Well, now there's some things here that people probably don't know about Jerry Harwood. Let me kind of outline them for you. He backpacked across Europe. He taught in a Ukrainian university. He worked in Rwanda after the genocide. And the biggest and the best of all, remodeled the Volkswagen thing. Great little car. Love those things.
Sort of remodeled. Like you could drive it up and down the mountain.
I don't know
if you take it to any coast.
Now, your new book, 12 Hours on the Block. Oh, it's your new book, 12 Hours on the Block, came out in September. I went to go find some reviews. I haven't seen any yet, but I did talk to someone else besides Russ and I that read the book, and they pretty much said the same thing I said, and that it's wild and crazy, and it goes everywhere. I don't know, and we talked on Tuesday night, and you told me where it came from. But why don't you give our readers an idea of where this whole book came from, other than the Aztecs?
Do you know, I figured it out before, Jerry, before you go into it, I actually figured out where the story came from. And I think you've dabbled in the hallucinogenics quite a bit.
The hallucinogenics.
And you're backpacking across Europe.
Oh, my backpacking, yes, with my younger days.
So the
idea
it's
came.
Based on, it's I, based I, on, okay. Please.
I'm sorry, yeah, so the idea came from my teaching in middle school. One of the things I have to teach every year is I teach creation stories, you know, ancient Mesopotamia stories, and we do the Greeks, and we even do the Big Bang as a creation story, and I get to pick and choose kind of my favorite ones, and I've always loved the Aztec story, so I tell it twice a year, you know, each semester to a different group of kids, and my favorite part of it is where the mother goddess swallows a one before, so obviously the thing to do is eat it. And when she eats it, no surprise, she becomes pregnant. And her other children get very angry with her in the myth. They get very angry because here she is pregnant and they don't know who the dad is. So, you know, even the ancient Aztecs had baby mama, baby daddy drama. And so they get all upset and her baby in her belly pops out. He's fully grown, kind of like Athena pops out of the head of Zeus in the Greek story. pops out fully grown and cuts one of his siblings in half, kills many of the others, and becomes sort of this god of war, right? And I was thinking through some story ideas and just, you know, just brainstorming what I wanted to write. And I love that story. And I was talking to my oldest son, he's 26, and we were talking about our favorite TV shows, and one of his is Prison Break. And I thought, well, that would be kind of cool. So that was the connect for me was what would happen if Hummingbird got put in prison because he killed all of his siblings. So, and it just sort of rolled from there.
Again, I think it was hallucinogenics.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to agree with you.
Or it was those middle school students that drove you to this craziness.
Maybe so. Maybe so. So yeah, that was the spark, and the rest could be a number of sources, right?
All right, I've got to ask you first of all, how long did it take you to write this?
Yeah, I was trying to dodge that. So you're still on that question.
Huh? Yeah, we're still there, Jerry.
That's right. So the way I write is I typically handwrite a starting draft, and the starting draft flowed pretty well. It came out in the course of about a week and a half of working on it. And then I let it sit, and then I came back and ran and typed it up. And that's usually my first edit. And that was probably about a month later, but I probably spent a month doing that. And then I sat it for another month. So, and then came back and did a third round on it. And then I sent it away to people smarter than me to help me with it, which is always important. So, start to finish, it was probably about a 5.5-6 month run, to finish. But the guts of the story itself, I did 2 weeks maybe. Got the guts on paper.
Wow. Gotcha. We're going to take a real quick break here. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. And right now, let's get a little word from LA Talk Radio. Welcome to Talk Radio. You're listening to LA Talk Radio's very own The Writer's Block, and I am your host, Jim Christina. And you know, in this time of COVID-19, when everybody is locked down and working from home, getting tired of that old terrestrial AM talk radio stuff and TV, how about this? How about you log on to LA Talk Radio? See, we've got some of the best talk, music, sports, help, you know, stuff here at LA Talk Radio. So why go any further? Why not just sit back and listen to what our hosts and our shows have to tell you? So that's LA Talk Radio, and it's found at latalkradio.com. And listen to The Writer's Block every Thursday night, 6 p.m., right here on LA Talk Radio. And we are back. It is now 6:15 or 6:16, and we're on the phone with Jerry Harwood. If you want to talk to Jerry tonight, the number in the studio here is 323-203-0815. Again, that number is 323-203-0815. And bear in mind that we do have commercials that run at 6:30 and at 6:45. So if you're going to call then, don't. Okay.
I thought you were just letting everybody know that's when they do a pee break.
No. You know, Jerry, I have to tell you. You sent us a PDF. I don't know if it was the final copy. Was that the final copy?
Or I'm was not it, sure if it
like
was
in
the
interim copy? Okay.
I think it was the copy I sent to my smarter than me editor.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because it was in an 8.5 by 11 format, and I'm sure this book was about 6 by 9.
Yes. Okay. So I definitely sent you I sent it to an editor and then got it back and then sent it to another. So at Three Ravens Publishing. So I sent you what I sent them and then they formatted it for me.
So tell me a little bit, because Jim was alluding to the connection with the Aztecs and how this worked out. I don't know anything about that genre and where this came from. But did it originate from your studies into this area, or was it something that you had an interest in and wanted to research for a book? How did you come about that?
Certainly. So my original intent was to write it as a young adult type book. you know, pretty accessible. The problem is, as I started studying the Aztec gods, there was just no way it was going to stay PG. And so it's not a, you know, it's not a super gory book or anything, but it really moved it into sort of what you would classify, I guess, as new adult, you know, that, that 18 to 25 year old age bracket. And you don't have to understand the Aztec myth, I think, to read the book and enjoy it. It certainly, you know, certainly probably is another layer for you. But what happens in the book is there's a prison riot. So Hummingbird comes out and he throws a guard over the balcony. And that's when everything begins, right? So the book follows two just regular people, Eli and Tay, who are just trying to survive. The prison goes down on what happens. And so the prison becomes sort of an anarchist area. And in that, people start dividing up their groups. And as they divide up their different groups to fight Hummingbird, who's the, you know, this main Aztec god, they're led by other kind of Aztec-inspired people. So there's a Hispanic Harley Quinn lady. There's a best modern example I can think of, someone like the Undertaker, the wrestler, that persona is there. So there's someone who's a little more flamboyant. There's someone, there's a, you know, pregnant lady who comes in, you know, sort of the goddess of childbirth and this sort of thing. But you don't have to know the Aztec to just enjoy the characters and enjoy the ride while Eli and Tay are trying to avoid dying.
Right.
Probably my favorite character is a man. He's sort of a Morgan Freeman and Shawshank Redemption type character. And all he wants to do during the whole thing is watch the Florida
Gators football game, right?
That's right. So he's somehow or another, you know, bootleg some cable in a cell, and he's just kicking back and watching TV. So, you know, there's a, there is a lot going on in the cell as they, as Eli and Tay, the two main characters, move around trying to figure out a safe place to be. So there's,
It was interesting. First of all, the relationship between Eli and Tay, I like that because they played a lot of humor back and forth off of one another, which was enjoyable. And so there were some chuckles, you know, through the book. So it didn't stay all serious. I will tell you that the way things change, and I don't want to give anything really away from this. It's just. I think I could tell the whole story and I wouldn't give anything away because it's so different. it's so different than anything I've ever read. And I told Jim when I finished reading it, when I got finished, I felt like I had just gotten off of a acid trip. That's exactly what I felt like. And I've never done that before.
Okay, I'm back. Can you all hear me now?
Hey, Jimmy.
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey.
Is it better?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, cool. Mm-hmm.
So we were just talking about kind of, you know, Jerry, I'm impressed. One of the questions I had written down, and you've already done this, but I'm really impressed because I wrote down, I was going to say, how do you actually describe or do a synopsis of this book? And you've done that very well. I could not have done it. I really was confused about how you would do it, but that was really well done.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. So fortunately, I had worked with a small indie publisher, Three Ravens, on another short story they had published. So I already had a relationship with them. So when I pitched the book, they knew me and they knew my writing. So they were a little more willing to probably give me an ear on it, which was great, you know, which was super great. And they actually helped me polish that synopsis, helped me polish, you know, what do they call it? Your elevator pitch. So my elevator pitch was, you know, Aztec gods enter into a modern prison, but that doesn't quite give you everything, does it? So it doesn't give you the killer quails or the pool that deforms and all this. So it was a real fun ride. I enjoyed riding it.
I have to ask, where did the killer quails come from?
That actually comes from the Aztec. They held the quail in veneration, but they also, you know, the quail would come and devour their crops. So like most things in the ancient world, you love it, but you also hate it. The sun gives you life. It'll also burn everything up. You know, the water, you have to have it to live, but it'll also flood you out. So you know, like most things, there's sort of a dark chaos side to it.
Huh. Okay. Well, I'm not really versed in the Aztec culture. So, I mean, the closest I came to was Mel Gibson's movie. What is it? The one about the Aztec warriors.
Oh, I was thinking Spaceballs. So.
No. Well, that's Mel Brooks.
But that's Mel Brooks. That's right. I was thinking, close. What Mel Brooks
but
movie?
That was a Aztec pretty funny movie, incidentally.
Yeah, it was. I know you're talking about Mel Gibson. Yeah, he had the one with the... I know which movie you're talking about. Great film. Great film. It's not a retelling of Aztec creations, you know, in total. I just borrowed from it. You know, I borrowed from it and had fun with it. So it's called 12 Hours because I chose 12 of the gods. Each one kind of gets his hour
right
in the book. So that's the framework for it. So that helps me organize the chaos inside the prison cell.
Right. Now, you have written some other books, and they're based on school. I assume your classrooms. I couldn't quite figure out what they were. Maybe you'd like to enlighten me.
Sure. So I have one other full-length book that's mine, and it is very different. It's called Jam Sessions. When I first started writing, I got involved in a writer's group. And asked them for advice. You know, I've never done this before. What do I do? And the advice I got, I think, was good advice. They said, write what you know. You know, what do you know? And so here I am. I just set aside a counseling job. I'm now teaching in a middle school. So I wrote about a middle school kid that he got moved in the middle of the school year and has anxiety about it, right? He has a lot of anxiety because he's been moved. My little twist in the story is, he goes to the office the first day, and his first friend is the school bully. The school bully is nice to him. And so he has this, you know, real dilemma as he gets involved in the school because now he's attached to the school bully. And it was a fun little ride, but it's not fantasy. It's not sci-fi. It's more like a Judy Blume Tales of the Fourth Grade Nothing or a Diary of a Wimpy Kid or something along those lines.
It's a YA novel.
Then
young adult.
That's right. Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Have been put out where my stories have been accepted. So I have a couple of historical fiction. I have one that is in a book called The Crazy Buffet, which is a cool name. And it's a fictional account from my experiences in Rwanda. It's not based on any one person I met. But I made a fictional account based on some of my experiences there. I have another one that's a little space story, sci-fi story. Miners are mining an asteroid, and they come across something to the effect of pterodactyls, sort of dinosaurs in space, because why wouldn't you have dinosaurs in space? They're pretty cool.
I can't figure why not.
Those are the two things. That's right. I mean, when I was a kid, all I wanted to do was play dinosaurs and play space. So why not do them both? But a short story is here. There.
Okay. We're going to take another real quick break. And you're listening to LA Talk Radio. This is The Writer's Block. And right now, how about a brief word from All Dogs Rule?
All Dogs Rule. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepovers is the place your dog wants to be if they can't be with you. Next time you need to be away from home and you can't take your four-legged friend with you, let him stay at All Dogs Rule. All Dogs Rule is a cage-free camp environment where your dog gets to run and play with other dogs among orange trees in a country setting of Fillmore, California. Round-trip transportation is available. And when your dog returns home, that smile on his face will leave you asking, whose vacation was better? Visit All Dogs Rule on the web at www.alldogsrule.com or give him a call at 805-524-1100. That's All Dogs Rule.
Great place. And incidentally, when he says pickup and delivery are free, that doesn't mean from Massachusetts or Maine. That means from California. I mean, if you don't live in California, forget about the ad for All Dogs Rule. Yeah, unless you're coming out there and you want to dump your dog off.
You know, it's interesting you mention that because we do get a lot of people from all over the country that are coming into Southern California to visit, and they're driving and they're bringing their dog with them, and they leave their dog with us for a couple of days while they go visit family and do, you know, the local attractions, that sort of thing.
Very cool. Do you gouge him? Do you
absolutely. Oh, we'll never see him again.
Love yourself. Okay. It is 6:30. We are on the air. This is LA Talk Radio. We are on the air with Russ Avison. And, of course, our guest for tonight is Mr. Jerry Harwood. And we're talking about his book, 12 Hours on the Block. And we've been talking about some of his other works that he's been going on. But right now, I think we're going to get into a little bit of a process thing with you, Jerry. What do you think?
Sounds great.
So what is your process? When do you find time to work? I mean, you work, you teach full time, you have a night class, you have six kids, a wife, two dogs, a cat, a grandson. Did I miss anything? Oh, yeah, a thing. What else did I miss?
That's right. Well, we had a beta fish till last week, but
sorry.
That's all right. That's right. We're recovering in our grief. I said earlier, one of the things I took the teaching role for was of middle school was so I could have summers off. So I found a couple of things that have really worked well for me. One is Story a Day. I don't know if y'all are familiar with the Story a Day website, but just a tremendous thing. They send a writing prompt every day for the month of May. So, and the challenge is to write a story every day for 1 month. 500 words, 100 words, 1,000 words. I think, the biggest one I wrote was like 2,000 words. But you're writing every day on these prompts. And as I wrote those, I'm getting up every morning reading the prompt. I'm constantly thinking about it. And that really primes my brain. So when I hit June and July and I'm off, I've got some ideas floating around. Mm-hmm. I've got some things I'm thinking about. And then I just get up every morning during the summer, and I write till 10 or 11 in the morning, and then I do whatever, the family's doing. Sometimes I catch time at night. I do write during the school year when I have an opportunity, but it's less. I really spend my fall and winter editing. And so I'm sitting on three drafts right now, kind of different stages. And I print them out. I'm old school that way. I print them out, take a colored pencil, and I read through them, make edits, go back and type them in. And that's my process now as I'm sitting there going through these books. One's pretty close to finish, and then one's in the middle, and then one is really a rough first draft that I'm still poking away at.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and so you prefer writing in the morning?
I do prefer writing in the morning. I'm a morning person by far. So I usually get up by 4:30 in the morning without an alarm clock. So that's a lot easier for me. But I do write in the evening sometimes. With the family, you just have to carve out that time and make those decisions.
Yeah, but then you get the kids going, why does Dad disappear into the office? Why every night is he in the office, clicking away on some keyboard? Why can't he be here with us?
That's right. You have to get them addicted to a really good show. If you can get kids hooked on it every night, that's always been good. The problem is sometimes I get hooked on the show too. Hijack you.
Wives say the same thing. How come you got to be in there? How come you can't be out here with me?
Hey, Jerry, I'm really curious about something that, Jim, we've been doing the show, 5 years?
A little over, yeah, but five and a quarter.
Okay. Wow, congratulations.
Thanks. The question I have, though, is that, first of all, how long have you been writing?
So I have been writing now just over 3 years.
Okay. How did you know that that was something you wanted to do or actually could do?
Oh, that's a great question. So I was in, and I had, this is the power of a teacher, right? I was a junior in high school, and I had a teacher whose name I did not know come up to me and say, "Why are you not in my creative writing class next year?" I've read some of your stuff. Now, I had a lot, I was pretty sarcastic. And so, you know, a lot of times when I had to write stuff for English teachers, my sarcasm came out, and somebody had passed it off to him. And he said, why aren't you in my creative writing class? I'd love to have you. And I just thought, well, I think I thought to myself, well, that would give me B period lunch. So that would be perfect. Yeah. It had that much thought in it, but I took his class. His name was Dr. Lanza. And I just loved it. Absolutely loved the class and won my school's creative writing award. And I thought, well, gosh, I love writing. This is what I'm going to do. Went to college, got busy doing other things, did some time in the evening, but didn't. Started having kids, got busy. So, you know, fast forward 25 years later, right? And was actually at a convention. Both my boys, I asked them to do something charitable when they turned 16. So my oldest son, he got involved in the fire program. So we became volunteer firemen. My youngest son got involved in costuming. So he got involved in making like the clone trooper costumes and the Mandalorian costumes. So we were at a convention and then going to hospitals dressed up like the characters, you know, visiting kids, stuff like that. So we were at a convention with, he was over there looking at, you know, plastic armor or guns or something. And I was just standing there and next to me was a table full of books. And I started talking to the people, they were right, and these are our books, and said, got to come join us. And I thought, well, you know what? I've been putting it off long enough. If I keep putting it off, it's never going to happen. So that was the step for me. It just took that other writer reaching out, and nudging me a little bit. And that group's just been a great blessing to me.
Wow.
That's a great story.
Okay, so maybe I still have it in me, then I could do it.
I'm telling you, Russ, you could write a book. You could.
I do it in my spare time.
That's right.
I mean, you happen to know a publisher.
That's true. I do. That's right.
Now, yeah. our group, before COVID, before all this stuff happened, we met at a restaurant that sold barbecue. It was a barbecue restaurant. And that was really the kicker for me was I loved hanging out with the guys and the girls that were writing. But felt like also having a golf group and not playing golf. But we all met for a meal and, you know, built friendships. And that was pretty key for me too, that friendship factor, building a friend circle and having them ask me, how many words did you write this month? You know, what are you doing? What's the problem? And it gave me a group to kind of shoot problems with. And that's been fun too.
Well, I mean, I went to a creative writing class, and Russ, you don't really need to if you don't want to, but they're interesting. They teach you a lot, and they give you a lot of really good pointers. And the one thing that my creative writing teacher always said, write your story. That was her big deal. Write your story. It doesn't matter if it's good, bad, or indifferent. Whoa.
Whoa, that was exciting.
God,
that sounded like the old Kubert game.
I'm telling you. But it was actually, her deal was always write your story. And I'm sure your creative writing teacher told you the same thing. Write your story.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. And that's my first book, right? Write what you know. But start writing. Start writing.
No, when you talk about write your story, I mean, just whatever you have on your mind, whatever feel that you want to talk about.
Exactly. Whatever story you want to tell. Don't stop and try to edit it yourself. Don't do any of that. Just keep writing. Okay. Just keep writing.
Speaking of editing, Jerry, how close is your final book to what you started with?
Probably 80-85%. Well, my first draft, probably 60% more. And so I may get to a place and I don't know exactly what I want to say. And so I'll just write, you know, in big words on the piece of paper, you know, Eli needs to get downstairs. And then I'll flip the paper over and then I'll write what happens downstairs because I've got that in my brain, right? And so that first draft oftentimes has some holes in it that you have to go back and figure out and fill out. And sometimes that changes the story. But as far as the editing and grammar and people helping me do that kind of stuff, the passive voice, not using it, showing, not telling, I was very, very blessed that I found some people from connections through my writing group, but I also found some people on Upwork. There's a couple great sites out there. Fiverr, I think, is one. Upwork is one where you can a la carte services. And I got on there, looked at people's reviews, found somebody actually is in California, and she just did great work with my first book, and really built kind of a friendship with her. I've used another girl as well, and I feel like she reads my stuff and knows me and my voice. And so when she makes corrections, it doesn't sound like her. And that's been a real blessing. And the biggest blessing is my wife supports my hobby. And so she's okay with me paying these people to take my book and, you know, bleed on it and correct it.
Wow.
So, because there's an expense to that.
Oh, yes, there is.
It is so worth it to get somebody to go in there and make those edits.
Interesting.
Well, I want to add, because the business has changed a lot. Jim, you've been writing for a long time.
Yeah.
Jerry,
12, 13 years. Yeah.
12 or 13 years. Okay. And Jerry, you've been writing for about 3 years. So, you know, you're kind of a newbie in this. And how do you find the industry to be as far as accepting and wanting to be involved with it? Because, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of people that want to become a writer and make money at it. And they have these, you know, great aspirations, but it's very tough to make money at it.
Well, first rule of a writer, don't plan on making any money.
that's probably wise. Yes. You know, I got some really good advice, from a seasoned writer. It happens that one of the volunteer firemen in my department, his wife is a writer who's made it, right? She's New York Times list and has done well for herself. And one of the pieces of advice that he and she gave me was, you know, why are you writing? And if you're writing to make money, there, you know, there's a formulas for that. There's books people buy and you can go out and figure out how to write those and learn the craft. You know, and there's nothing wrong with that. I think a lot of people write because they have a story they want to tell. They have something that interests them and they want to share it with their group. There's a lady in my writer's group who loves to write local fiction. You know, she likes to write stories about our area. There's another guy who likes to write haunted house stories, but he knows haunted houses in Tennessee. So that's his genre and his thing. He's never going to get rich writing about haunted houses in a small city in the South. Maybe he will. I don't know. I guess it's possible. But his market is that. That's why he's writing. We have others who write just because it's therapeutic for them. They, when they write, they have to their play, find another thing. So it's just part of what they do. And we have people who like to write because they like to sell books and they like to make people happy. So I think that's a key part of it. But I would certainly agree that the advice I've been given is don't write to become a millionaire.
There's better
occupations.
That's
you
exactly
become a dog
right.
trainer to do that.
Yeah, you do. You do. And you have to own 20 acres on the Sespe River and beautiful, lush orange trees and grass and blah, blah, blah. Okay.
Blah, blah, blah.
We're going to take another quick break. This is LA Talk Radio. You're listening to The Writer's Block. And if we can keep Russ quiet for just a minute, we'll hear a little word from Creative Edge. When Creative Edge was founded in 2016, they immediately showed they weren't going to be the same as other publicity firms. No, sir. You see, the folks at Creative Edge, they work closely with their individual clients, their needs, and their goals, pushing them harder and to get them noticed and get them booked. They believe communication is an important part of the partnership, and that model is exactly how they have built their success. They work on the, I can do that better, and they have indeed done just that. They collaborate and work with local, national, and international media outlets and organizations to meet their clients' goals and needs. So Creative Edge is your brand. It's your future. Mickey Mickelson, publicist, and you can find them at creative-edge.services. And we are back. We're back with our guest, Jerry Harwood, and that's a name that you should know, Jerry, Mickey Mickelson.
Yes, and I was so fortunate to connect with Mickey. He's just been tremendous. And one of the things I've learned is writers, I want you to read someone else's book. I'm not competitive at all. Whatever genre I'm writing in, that makes you want to pick up another one. And eventually you're going to pick up mine.
Sure.
So it's all beneficial. And the people I worked with on Upwork, Katie Salidas, is one of those people who said, you know, have you thought about marketing? Of course, I was in my first year doing this. I thought, no, I hadn't thought about that at all.
Katie Salidas is a friend of this show's.
Yeah,
she is. Katie is a great gal, and she writes just a nasty horror vampire books. Oh, they're so good. But at any rate, okay. The name of this program.
She put me in touch with Mickey.
Right. She used to be with Mickey. She's no longer. The name of the show is The Writer's Block. Have you ever had writer's block? And if you have, how do you get through?
That is pretty clean. It's about ready to go to a proofreader. And it is a dystopian Western. So it's a time in the future of America, you know, dystopian America. But the lead character is a Texas Ranger. And I have a great character in there who I just love. His name is Leonard. And Leonard has an intellectual disability, but like in a lot of books, he's also one of the most knowledgeable characters, right? So he has this weakness, but he's also probably the smartest guy in the room a lot of times. Which was great, but I got to a place in the book where I had to have the gunfights. And I had no idea what to do with Leonard. Like, I couldn't figure out what to do with him. And I set that book down for probably 4 months and just drove every day home and turned the radio off and sat there and thought, how am I going to keep Leonard from getting shot? Right. That was the thing. I didn't, you know, the who shot JR. I didn't want anybody to shoot Leonard. I liked him too much.
pick up one of my books, Jerry. They'll teach you how to go through a gunfight.
Okay. So, and Leonard, of course, has no common sense, right? So, I did a couple of things to get through that. One is I picked up some books on writing. You know, how do you write? The other thing I did is I just started reading. You know, you say pick up your book. I started picking up books. I read Louis L'Amour as a kid. I started picking up Louis L'Amour books, and I picked up. Michael Sullivan's books. And I just started picking up books that were kind of tangential to my genre and reading them. And after a while, I finally started seeing, okay, there's ways to do this, right? And I could step back into it, lean back into it. Okay. But that was probably the beginning.
There you go. That's actually a good idea. I hate to do this, but we are out of time.
Uh-oh.
And I want to say I apologize for the glitches and the snafus at the top of the show. And if you contact Jerry, our bookie, she'll get you booked. She'll get you in the line for next year, and we'll get you back on the show. How's that?
Oh, that is too kind of you. I appreciate that.
Oh, it's no worries. And thank you so much for joining us and staying up so late. I mean, right now it's what, 11 o'clock or 10? 11.
10 o'clock. All good.
Yeah. So thank you so much for spending your hour with us, and we appreciate it. And we hope to hear you back on the show next year sometime.
Thank you, gentlemen. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks,
it's been
Jerry.
A pleasure, Jerry. Thank you.
Bye-bye. And the book is 12 hours. 12 hours in the block, and it's about prison. Oh, it's not about just so much. It's just so about so much. But it is it's an interesting book, is it not, Russ?
Unbelievably so. It's nothing. You know what? He was talking about how he started to read a lot of different books and different things. And I have to say that in doing this show, I've probably now read, because I only do this once a month,
right,
probably about 60 books.
Right.
That I never would have picked up had it not been for the show.
Exposed
me to so many different types of writing. And this one in particular was nowhere in my mind could I've ever thought I would read a book like this, and really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was different.
It came totally out of left field. It truly did. And it's kind of hung there. God, really? And you look and you I still got 40 more pages. But then you find yourself, you can't put it down.
Oh, yeah. And one thing we didn't talk about, there was, and I won't even say what it is, but there's something that's borrowed right from an Indiana Jones movie.
Oh, yes, it's, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. It's quite good.
Yeah. He did a good job. But Jerry did a good job. And it's nice to know that he did have an editor after all. So there you go. Next week, when Bobby joins us back again at the Writer's Block, we have Jessica Treadway is going to be with us. Her book is The Gretchen Question, and it is recounts the day in the life of Roberta Chase. And whoever she is, I'm sure we'll find out for the week coming up. We'll have to read the book. And other than that, Russ, thanks so much for hanging tough.
Thank you, sir.
Oh man, this has been a night, isn't it? Woo!
It is. Well, you know, it's part of 2020.
It is. Oh yeah. Okay. I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go totally.
Like it's almost, you almost expect it.
Yeah. I like it. Did you watch the debate last night?
I did.
Yeah,
I did. Okay. And it was really enlightening, and it was interesting to see that our current vice president is basically just like a mini me to Trump.
Yeah, he's a liar. Okay,
just more polite.
We're gonna call it there. And for Russ Avison, Bobby Jean Bell, myself, Jim Christina, Ronan Rosner, and of course Sam Hassan, right here at LA Talk Radio. We are out of here. And before we leave, keep those masks on. Good night, everyone.